Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to a special Gamescom preview edition of the Pocket Link podcast. I'm Rick Henderson, and joining me for most of this coming half hour will be Pocket Link contributing editor Max Freeman-Mills. He'll be heading to the show itself, so will help me look forward to the biggest games and accessories we both expect to launch in Cologne. In addition, I'll be chatting with Sony marketing manager Mike Somerset about its own foray into PC gaming, and specifically the launch of the brand's first headset and monitor range, InZone. But first, back to Max and the forthcoming Gamescom. Now, Max, this will be the first in-person show for a few years, with the last couple cancelled due to the pandemic. What are you expecting from the event?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting one. Gaming has been quite tentative in terms of getting its big events back in person. So this is really the first big conference that we've had in a long time. And I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, very much looking forward to getting to Cologne. I think on the game side, it's a bit of an interesting one, as you said, because there are, in fairness, a few quite big names that are not going to be at the show, which you would normally expect to be present. The likes of Nintendo and PlayStation have both stepped away this year. But equally, there are some really big names that are very much going to be present. You know, Xbox will be there, Ubisoft will be there. There's quite a few big studios that are going to be showing up and showing off what they've got. I'm really looking forward to exploring the Xbox booth. It's been a long time since Xbox has had a chance to show off its wares in person like this. I'm really looking forward to, for example, A Plague Tale Requiem that they've confirmed was going to be playable on the floor for people to drop by and have a go with. The first game, A Plague Tale Innocence, is a few years old now, but is a really excellent sort of stealth action game, a bit like a slightly lower budget version of The Last of Us, but just as kind of nail-biting and tense at various points, with a fun kind of period setting around the Black Death. So as much as that sounds cheery, I'm nonetheless looking forward to trying out the sequel, which looks gorgeous from the trailers they've shown off so far. Interestingly, Xbox isn't going crazy hard on its first-party titles. I think we've noticed that, you know, some of the games it has announced in recent years, things like the Fable reboot, for example, are still a little way off being sort of in a shape where they can really show them to people and let people get hands on. But nonetheless, there's quite an interesting bevy of third party smaller indie titles that I think I'll look forward to getting my hands on if I have the time, because Lord knows one of the things at these shows is that you do start to run out of time as you try and get around.
Indeed. Gamescom is it's quite a unique show actually in the calendar, because it is part trade show for press and trade visitors, but also part public. And the public side of it is massive. Having been there myself a few times, the halls are enormous and there are many of them. And they are all sort of dedicated to the public, generally dressed in cosplay. So it's quite a festival of gaming for those. Whereas for the press and the trade side, they get to see games that maybe the public haven't seen yet, or maybe games that aren't even out until late next year. So it's an interesting show for sure. It's also well-timed, because if you think about it, E3, which wasn't on this year but will be coming back next year, that's in the summer, so very, very few of the games that you see at E3 are playable because they aren't going to be coming out for a very long time. Whereas at Gamescom, a lot of the games that are there are coming out this year. They're coming out this Christmas. So a lot of them will be hands-on. So you'll get to actually play quite a few games. The one thing that I have noticed, though, Max, and I wonder if you've also noticed this, is because it's like dipping its toe back into the waters of a big trade show, there does seem to be quite a few absences in bigger companies, don't there?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously, in an ideal world, you would want PlayStation and Nintendo certainly there to round out the big three companies, especially in a year where Nintendo really is releasing sort of big game after big game. So it's got a lot in its pipeline, but a lot of that stuff is not going to be something that we'll get our hands on at the show anyway. But as you say, I think it's an interesting one because it opens up the chance for some of the smaller developers and smaller publishers, some of which, frankly, are not that small anymore when you talk about the number of acquisitions going on at the moment. But it opens up a chance for them to get a little bit more airtime without those sort of huge mega publishers there to kind of suck everyone in the entire time. But as you say, also, when it comes to the games coming out this year, it's a great point because there's some interesting big titles that in a normal year, because although we're well past the pandemic in some ways, you know, still, as you say, in spring and summer, we were not business as usual yet. There are some really big games that people just haven't really had a chance to play. Sonic Frontiers, for example, which has kind of got a little bit of criticism coming its way based on the visual style that it's shown off in its trailers. A few people have had hands-on with that, but by and large, very few people have. That's going to be at Gamescom. So it's going to be a really interesting opportunity to see something that is meant to come out before the end of 2022, but which almost no one has had hands-on time with yet, and see, you know, is this actually the kind of potential disaster that people are worried about? Or is it, you know, a solid game that's just maybe not had quite the polished trailers it needed? So that's one I'm going to look forward to sinking my teeth into if I can. And then on the indie front, I know, for example, if anyone's ever played the game Subnautica, it's on Xbox, or it was for a long time on Xbox Game Pass. It's a kind of creepy subnautical game where you explore massive aquatic areas. The developers of that game have got a new project, completely unannounced, but they've confirmed that whatever it is, it's going to be at Gamescom, and I think it may also be playable. So it's a good chance for some of those smaller names to kind of show off what they've been working on for the last 3 to 5 years. While COVID has obviously disrupted things hugely, but nonetheless also meant that quite a lot of stuff has kept pretty secret as a result, because there just haven't been the opportunities to let people in and show them off.
Later in the show, we'll actually come back and talk about a few more of the titles that you might actually see, plus some of the hardware that might actually be at Gamescom. But I'd also like to quickly touch upon Opening Night Live, because that has been something that has kept Gamescom kind of running over the last few years, because without a show, the Opening Night Live has been the only thing to do with Gamescom, really. And it is Jeff Keighley's massive showcase event, whereby he races through a load of games, basically game trailers, that normally might not have got their own keynote address. So he packages them all together in a 2-hour special. What is interesting again this year is it'll be the first Opening Night Live in a long time that will actually have an audience. And he's promising thousands of audience members. Do you think that will make a massive difference? Or will there certainly be a lot more whooping and a hollering?
Yeah, I'm sure we can expect some nice over-the-top reactions to trailers if series fans are in the house. but as you say, it's a kind of a return to the community feeling that has been sadly missing for quite a long time. And, I mean, if all that Jeff Keighley did now was the Summer Games Fest, you'd think that'd be enough in terms of the outsized influence he has on gaming media. Yeah. But to also be in charge of effectively the big sort of curtain raiser for Gamescom, really.
And the Game Awards, of course.
And the Game Awards as well. I mean, he's just a giant in the industry at this point, and seemingly very well liked, which is lovely. But yeah, no, I think it should be a really interesting show. And as you say, I believe actually fans can get tickets now. I don't know how easy that process will be, whether they're going to be scarce, but he has tweeted that people can get tickets now. So if you're in the area, worth checking.
Yeah, there's only a few days left to go to Gamescom, and apparently there are some tickets still available. So if you're in the Köln area, then do look it up. It's genuinely, I don't know what to expect. Having been to, I don't think I've been to an Opening Night Live or any major event at Gamescom for a long time. In fact, Xbox was the last one, I think, to actually do a press conference, and that was a fair few years ago. But but I had been to a lot of E3 ones, and the one thing I will note that you have to hope that you're not sitting directly in front of a marketing person from one of the companies being mentioned, because quite frankly, you might lose an eardrum or two.
Yeah, legally enforced cheering is a classic.
It can get quite deafening at times, but it does raise that thing that we we've been missing for the last few years. You and I have been covering Opening Night Live and the other events over the last couple of years, and it's not quite the same when you're sat covering it whilst watching YouTube, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, you get a small taste of the reaction side of things if you're frantically refreshing Twitter while also trying to write a news story about whatever has just been announced. But as you say, being in the room and really getting that immediate read on how people are reacting to something is quite hard to replace. And it's great that it's back. And hopefully it goes from strength to strength here.
Max will be back with more games he hopes to see at Gamescom later, as well as some of the hardware that should be there. First, though, Sony recently expanded into gaming beyond its PlayStation brand through the launch of a new range of headsets and monitors under the Sony InZone line. I recently caught up with the company's marketing manager, Mike Somerset, to talk about the timing of the move and what Sony's audio department can bring to the table when it comes to dedicated gaming devices. I started by asking him why Sony has decided to enter the peripherals market separate to PlayStation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think many people would immediately associate, quite rightly, immediately associate Sony with PlayStation, and therefore also quite rightly assume that the headphones were really designed for PlayStation and being perfect for PlayStation. What we've got here with InZone is actually a little bit different. So obviously Sony's got an incredible history with music and obviously with gaming through PlayStation, but what we're doing here is really aiming something, yes, for PlayStation players, but also, and actually significantly, for PC gamers. And I think that's a really important point. I mean, there are certainly some features of these headphones that you would probably agree are really all about PC gaming. So it's partly that. It's to sort of distinguish, we know about PlayStation. Also, many people know about Sony Music and our history in that sense. And what we're doing here is really creating a product that is perfect for PlayStation, but also really focused on the PC gamer.
Well, coming from a Sony angle, what technologies and innovations can Sony bring to gaming headsets and monitors that perhaps aren't that common?
Sure. Well, that's a good question. So in terms of gaming, it's largely about what do you as a gamer want to get out of it. So if this is about competitive gaming, then actually that's really what InZone is focused on. It's about tuning the products to enable the gamer to do better, to win. And that's actually what both the monitor and one of the things the monitor and the headphone have in common. So in terms of headphones, there's a big focus on spatial sound. And what's the benefit of this? It means that, I mean, for any game benefits from spatial sound, but specifically if you look at games like third-person shooters, first-person shooters, which are wildly popular at the moment, being able to precisely locate where the enemy is or where the good guys are by sound, and I don't just mean slightly to the left, slightly to the right, I mean exactly how far it is away from you on the battlefield or wherever you may be, is hugely beneficial. So actually, InZone brings an incredible level of detail, not just in terms of immersing you in it and having exciting feeling of, you know, the explosions are real and, you know, all that kind of thing, but it actually gives you an edge. It gives you a benefit. So that's really the key focus. There are some other things as well that we bring in, and remember that Sony is drawing on many decades of experience from high-quality, award-winning music headphones, and we're taking a lot of that, but optimizing it for gaming. And what that means is we're very proud of the sound quality itself, so not just the level of precision in terms of spatial sound, but the sound quality, the bass response, and the speed at which it interacts with the game is all very very good.
We've always been big fans of the WH-1000 series at Pocket Lint. It's won many of our awards, etc. And one of the things that we think it always gets right is noise cancellation. And that has been translated into the certainly the H9. And
that's right.
Yeah. How necessary is noise cancellation for gamers at that level?
That's a good question. I would actually take that a bit further and say there's two things here we're talking about. We're talking about noise cancellation, but we're also talking about ambient mode. Now, first of all, noise cancellation, the benefit here, of course, is all about focusing in on the game. you know, if you want to just immerse yourself to just be more, you know, to enjoy it that little bit more, or if those crucial little details, those little, you know, leaves rustling in the distance, the sound of an enemy reloading their gun on the other side of the wall, if all of that is important to you in the gameplay, noise cancelling is perfect. I mean, especially PC gamers will recognize what I'm talking about here, but if you're running a high-end PC, laptop, stack, whatever it is you've got, there are some whirring fans. They make a lot of noise, and noise cancelling is ideal to just remove that. You know, whether you've got noisy neighbors, you know, there's a road nearby, people are mowing the lawn in the garden, actually being able to isolate the game from the rest of the world and simply focus on that is brilliant. And I think many gamers will really appreciate why that is good. The reason I mention ambient mode is it's a whole nother level, which I think is also important if you're using headphones while gaming. Ambient mode uses the microphones on the headset to hear what's going on around you, more so than if you didn't have that feature, which basically means, let's say you're playing on the game, I don't know, you're waiting for a delivery and you don't want to miss it, you know, ambient mode is perfect. You'll be able to hear when someone rings on the door. For me, I'm a dad of two little kids, and I play my game at night. I use my headphones, but I leave ambient mode on, because if my kids wake up and I hear them sort of crying out, if I'm blocked off from the world, I can't hear them, you know. So there's lots of reasons why either you'd want to block the world out so you can focus on the game, or you want to open the world up and stay connected to what's going on around you so that you don't miss something that you may be waiting for. So actually, I think this is a really important feature, a really exciting feature to have on the H9, and compared to a, what we would sort of say, passive noise isolation type headphone, which means headphones that simply block out the external noise simply by blocking it, not doing any additional technology. I think it's a real benefit to have something like the H9, which can record the sound around you, cancel it out, or play it back to you.
The in-zone headsets and monitors combine cleverly when used in conjunction with each other as well. So especially when connected to a PC, is that something the brand will explore further in future with other accessories?
Well, this is a really nice thing. I think one of the questions we initially got about this was, you know, how are they working together? You know, what is the benefit of a monitor and the headphone? And of course, like, we're talking about what you're seeing and what you're hearing, the two key sensitive. What we've got here is a unified software. It's called InZone Hub, which, when you have it connected to your PC, InZone Hub, you can control the settings, the configuration of your monitor, and in the same software, can control the settings and configuration of your headset. Now, obviously, that's nice just from a convenience point of view, but also what you can do is introduce profiles through this. So let's say you have a profile for a specific game that you're playing. If you click on that profile, it will adjust your headset according to that, plus adjust your monitor in one simple selection. So it makes it much easier for a customer or a user, a gamer, to be able to jump straight into the game and jump between games through it. So I think this sort of synergy between the products is hugely important, and it's also becoming more expected from gamers and from customers. You don't feel like you should be jumping from one piece of software to another piece of software to configure something else, to get something else working. You really want to bring it all together in one single place.
The headsets have built-in boom mics. Was there a temptation to also have one that didn't have a built-in boom mic, so you could use it as a conventional headset as well when commuting, for example?
The great thing about, so I, a lot of people have asked me about the boom mic and why we've done what we've done, what are the benefits, etc. So the thing to remember about our boom mic and the way we've implemented it is it's the easiest, quickest way to activate, deactivate without taking your hands off your controller or your keyboard and mouse for more than a split second. So basically, each headset has a mic, a boom mic, which flips down. Once it's down, it's activated. Just simply flicking it up, it deactivates the mic. So you can very quickly jump between the two. This really is the most convenient way to quickly jump through. Remember, these are optimized and designed specifically for gamers. Of course, if someone wanted to wear these around elsewhere than they would be able to do so. But these headsets have been designed for gamers. So actually, what's the best, most convenient way to allow someone to activate, deactivate, and position a mic appropriately? We believe this is the best way to do it, and it gives the user the most flexibility.
In terms of visual design, the InZone products do look similar to PlayStation 5, the white with black elements. Is that intentional, or is it kind of just a mood that's going on in that area of the market right now?
I think it's important to have like a unified design theme across a number of these gaming products. And actually, we have had lots and lots of positive feedback about it. When I first saw the design myself, I was really excited because most headsets have a kind of conventional kind of often black, often sort of sharp edged. And they all, I mean, some of them, you know, look nice, but they're all very, there's a lot of similar styles. This was quite different. And obviously the link through to PlayStation, the matching with the monitor, I was excited by it. I always get a bit nervous because you never know how people are going to react to new looks, but it's been overwhelmingly positive. Many people say they much prefer this aesthetic. So I think it's important. It stands out from the crowd. It unifies a whole bunch of products that work really well together as well. So it's not just about style. It also kind of gives you an indication that they work well.
And finally, what can we expect from the future of the InZone range? Now, obviously, InZone's a brand new brand. It's something that's thing. So I wouldn't imagine this is the end of it. But would, say, for example, the InZone brand, or could the InZone brand look to further afield, look at other kinds of accessories?
So InZone at the moment, the key thing that is behind InZone is this tune to win. It's all about enjoying games, but actually being able to give you a specific advantage in gaming. I mean, with the headsets, something that we haven't really yet is the spatial sound bespoke hearing profiles that you can get with the headset, which basically means everyone's ears are a little bit different. That means everyone hears or their brains understand direction of sound slightly different to each other because of the shape of everyone's ears. Sony InZone headsets will allow customers to take photos of their ears and being able to make a hearing profile specific for that person. So as you can see, with features like that and the different things we've introduced on the monitor, InZone is all about giving a competitive advantage to win. That really is our focus at the moment. I mean, as to what the next thing is, I can't say at the moment. Like you say, it's very, very new. But what we want to be able to do is get these products out to customers who really want to, enjoy the gaming more, but also take their gaming to the next level. So that's really what InZone Gaming is about for the time being.
That springs up one last thing, is that do you think that the InZone range might actually even prompt new ideas for other ranges in Sony? For example, the way that certain microphone technologies work on the WH series going forward, etc. Obviously, the InZone headsets have benefited greatly from Sony's heritage in music. So could the music side of things, the headphone side of things, benefit from the InZone side?
You're absolutely right about the gaming headsets really have drawn a lot from our experience. And that's not just about in terms of the drivers that used to drive the sound or the dual microphones that, as you mentioned earlier on, are also used in our 1000X series headphones to cancel out noise. Yeah, they share a lot of technologies. Obviously, do bear in mind the InZone headset is all optimized specifically for gaming. And, these technologies do go around. I wouldn't be able to comment as to if that is specifically going to happen. But, of course, what we do see is a really exciting new line coming out from Sony with this InZone headsets. We'll just have to see where that goes and what new things are introduced. There's always going to be a synergy between our music headphones and our gaming headsets, and the products that we create.
Now back to Max and Gamescom. So, Max, are there any other games that have particularly piqued your interests?
Yeah, so there are quite a few. We're all looking forward to finding out a little bit more, I think, about Hogwarts Legacy, which we are pretty sure believe we know is going to be shown off extensively at the show. We've seen actually a small amount of gameplay so far, but it's always nice to get kind of lengthier demos. So I'm hoping that we might be able to get to see someone, you know, play for more like 20 or 25 minutes even at one point, and really see kind of what it's going to be like to live in that world. Because that looks like a really ambitious RPG, and I know there's countless fans around the world who've been waiting for a proper high-budget Harry Potter game. It's just been delayed into 2023, so it's no longer kind of massively imminent. But at the same time, you know, we're only a few months away from 2023, and it's coming out right at the beginning of the year. So I'd anticipate something around that. Similarly, we know Ubisoft is going to be at the show, and Skull and Bones is one of the kind of great sagas of games over the last 5 to 7 years.
A great pirate saga,
exactly. It's been rumoured forever, and at one point, in fact, at various points, presumed that it was just a dead project that Ubisoft was too ashamed to admit was gone.
To give you an idea, I think I played my first demo of it at E3 2016.
Yep, so it is... It has been through so many different iterations, and then sort of in classic modern style, relatively abruptly this summer, Ubisoft kind of takes the wraps off and says, hey, here's Skull and Bones. Here it is. We've finally done it. and it looks really interesting. It looks a little bit like a kind of the naval parts of an Assassin's Creed game, just basically chopped off and isolated. And that's the game, which could be amazing. But we're also, you know, it'll just be interesting to see what the gameplay loop is really like, especially in a world where Sea of Thieves is already out there fulfilling the piratical needs of quite a lot of gamers. So that's a really interesting one.
What I like about Skull and Bones is that you don't have to, that you can pilot a ship yourself rather than need four people to all help out. I've always struggled with the communication skills on Sea of Thieves.
For sure, for sure. So I think Sea of Thieves is interesting because the people that love the game, I think, love specifically that fact that you have to work together, that someone's on the steering wheel, which is not the right term, but you know what I mean. Someone else is making sure the sails are trimmed and someone else is on anchor duty. But if you're feeling a little bit less involved and you also don't necessarily want to depend on three other people to make sure that everything goes well, quite nice to be able to move your ship around and do what you want to do without that dependency on other people and on social features, unless you want them, which is always welcome, yeah. We've been speculating about Warner Brothers and exactly what shape they're going to be in at the show. But if they are there and if there is a booth, we're really excited to see a bit more of Gotham Knights, which again, oh, yeah, looks like it's building on the legacy of the Arkham games, the Batman Arkham games, in a way that's pretty convincing from the trailers we've seen, which are pretty extensive. You know, more characters, more fighting styles, and visuals that once again just underline some, it looks great from every angle. So I'm really hoping we see more of that, because that's just a couple of short months away from release as well, and as far as I know, not many people have had their hands on that either.
I still don't know why they moved away from the Arkham universe though.
Yeah, Whether they just felt that they told all the stories they wanted to, or whether it's just a kind of see if we can establish a new brand, I don't know. But certainly I think it's remarkable anytime you revisit, especially the second couple of Arkham games, just how well they hold up. I mean, especially on the visual front, you could really fool yourself into thinking that Arkham Knight, for example, came out on modern hardware. It looks astonishing. So I think there's some really good potential there. And for horror fans, there's an interesting game coming called The Callisto Protocol that we know is going to get a showcase as part of Opening Night Live, which looks frankly horrifying. It's another space-bound horror shooter that's taken clear inspiration and, in fact, created by one of the creators of Dead Space, which itself is getting remade. And it looks, again, visually pretty splendid, just really detailed, but in that way where a horror game having a lot of detail can be pretty harrowing. So looking forward to seeing more of that as well, which similarly comes out this year. So there's a lot on the horizon, and I think Gamescom, whether or not every game we've mentioned is there in playable form or whether it's just a new trailer, it's definitely going to be a great opportunity to see more of these games, which I'm looking forward to very much. Yeah.
We're also looking forward to reading some of your stuff on any hardware that might be out there. For example, I know that Turtle Beach are going to be there and they will have some new headphones. Now, PC headsets, I mean, we've just had an interview with Sony InZone. It's growing so massively as a market.
It's a crazy market. I mean, one of the things that's been really interesting in my time at Pocketlint, I've been covering gaming headsets, especially on the console side, for pretty much the whole time I've been writing for Pocketlint. And from just before the pandemic to now, the change in what these headset makers have been able to squeeze in is crazy. Two and a half years ago, when a new headset came out, if it had, for example, say 12 hours of battery life, that was pretty good, you know, that was a solid performance, yeah, right in the middle of the market. Now you've got people like HyperX and Turtle Beach dropping headsets that have 80 to 120 hour battery lives, like it's pretty much run of the mill. That's the new normal in many cases. And the audio quality just keeps getting better and better. The microphones are better than they ever have been. And I think it's a real marker of, you know, this market is exploding for a reason. People, not just because of the pandemic, but spurred on by it, people are using headsets. People have finally started to clock that games sound incredible when you're not listening to them through default TV speakers sort of 10 meters away from you. And similarly, party chat is just so much more normalized, I think, for some people than it was a couple of years ago. And as you say, there's most of the big peripheral makers are going to be at Gamescom in one form or another. And some of that stuff is interesting because, as you said, it's slightly less public facing and it's a bit more kind of letting the industry see what they've been up to. So it'll be really interesting to try some of these headsets on, see what's different, see what's new. There's a lot to explore, I'm sure.
It's Nason is another one, which is obviously a big games publisher in its own right anyway, but also has all of its, I think it bought out the Jabra range, or was it the Plantronics?
I think it was Plantronics. Which is called Rig in the American market.
Yes, that's the one.
There's some really interesting, they've got a very kind of industrial looking design language that I think is still translating. And as you say, some of these companies just have huge ranges now because, again, it's not a case of, you know, we've got one hero headset. I mean, Sony's interesting because it's starting to break into the more gamer side of that market. And at the moment, they're really premium. But the sense of these companies putting out headsets for basically every budget under the sun is again, just it's a really impressive sort of slate of products that most of them now have, whether you want a headset for £25 or whether actually you want the bee's knees of audio, a sort of 300 plus range. And it's amazing. The more you use them, trust me, the more you use them, the more you're tempted by the premium offerings. I'm now, you know, sitting in front of my PlayStation 5 using a headset that costs 2/3 as much as the console. And that feels somehow normal when it's distinctly not. But my goodness, does an immersive game take sort of 5 steps further when you give it the audio treatment it really deserves?
I think we'll end with something that you might not see there, but you would love to see there. And I'll kick it off, so give you a little bit of time to think, because I've thrown that one at you. I would love to see a pro style from whichever manufacturer PlayStation 5 controller, because I've already gone through about 5 PlayStation 5 controllers in the short time that it has been in existence.
Yeah, they're so scarce still. I'm dead lucky in that I reviewed for us Scuffs.
Scuffs
high-end controller, but there's really only a couple of options. And I think, in fact, this summer there have been a little spate of uncorroborated rumors that Sony itself is working on a PlayStation Pro controller, as it were, you know, basically a more durable controller with
paddles. Which is, I think it needs, it's very, it's necessary. I was chatting to someone at Amazon recently, and one of the products most returned and replaced in recent times is the PlayStation 5 DualSense.
Yeah, it's almost as if with those extra immersive features, the durability took an even further hit.
That's the thing. Fantastic features, but unfortunately, the number of different things that can go wrong on that controller means that something goes wrong on that controller.
Yes, for sure.
So how about yourself? Is there something like a wish, one product you would really wish to see?
So right now, I will confess that I am still 2.5 years in, chronically addicted to Call of Duty Warzone. And I have no reason to believe that Activision will suddenly rock up with a booth where I can get a little sneak preview. But if I could get a glimpse of what Warzone 2.0, which we know is arriving later this year, could look like, I would come back from Colm a very, very, very happy man. So, and as I say, that's on the forlorn end of the spectrum because I don't believe that's going to happen. They are playing their cards very close to their chest. But I would be absolutely thrilled if I could get any info on that.
And that's it for this week's special edition podcast. You'll be able to follow Max and the team's exploits during Gamescom on pocketlint.com all this coming week. For now, I hope you found this episode enjoyable, and if so, please leave a review on your listening platform of choice. I've been Rick Henderson, and I hope you'll join us for the next podcast where we'll have another packed lineup of guests and tech for you. Tatty bye.